Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and my co-host for the Big Three today is none other than Jessica Baker. Welcome, my dear friend. Another week.
Yeah, what a surprise.
What a surprise. It's you. There is no surprise. You are my co-host. Bonnie to my Clyde.
Oh, bless.
What's coming up, my friend? What's going on?
I'm just milking every last second of independence and quietness there is before a child arrives.
Yeah.
So, like, lots of date nights are happening.
Lovely.
Lots of sitting on the lounge.
Ah,
lots
exceptional.
Of not moving. A lot of cleaning, which I don't, is unnecessary.
Wow.
Yeah. The pantry's been reorganized spectacularly. Oh, yeah, there's Tupperware.
But what a dream that is. Like, don't you just feel like... And, like, you're really succeeding at being an adult when you've got a clean cupboard.
Yeah, delightful. I've got a snack box. I've got a healthy snack box. And then an unhealthy snack box that's triple the size of the healthy snack box.
It's good to be realistic.
Yeah, like, let's not play around.
Let's just
I'm
own
not going to eat that many
is.
Muesli bars and protein balls. Like, really.
My chia seeds.
Yeah. And but the triple butter popcorn in the unhealthy box, like, that's what I'm here for. Yeah.
Yeah.
For those movie nights before a child
glorious.
Arrives. That's a good time.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a joy.
Like, he's just thinking of popcorn now.
I'm just like, I'm hungry and I'm envious of that time that you're having now.
Yeah.
I'm not envious
of what's
what
to come.
Is to come. But we won't talk about that.
No. Look, no. I'm very aware of what's involved
well, probably
in the first
more than
couple
most
of weeks.
As a midwife.
Yeah, I sit with a lot of crying mums and pat them on the shoulder and tell them they're doing a good job. So I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm prepping my husband of like, I'm not going to look cute.
Yeah.
I'm going to be an emotional wreck and let's just dive in.
But I think we can agree that Jacob, you know, is just going to do swimmingly as
I mean,
the supportive husband.
He better. Most of his attention will be taken up with the terrorist dog.
Yeah. That's been a time for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So Huxley, I just don't know what
Where
else
do
to
we
say.
Go?
Yeah. But Jake will be preoccupied mostly with him and I'll be preoccupied with the newborn.
Yeah, you welcomed a psychopathic canine into your home
not
long before.
No. No, we celebrated his first birthday last week. It was beautiful.
Lovely.
It was such a glorious time. I just looked back and regretted all the choices I'd made. But here we are. He's a little cutie.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Great on the gram, less so in reality. It's that whole Instagram versus reality. He looks great on a post, but like.
But we don't like it.
Well, we'll pray for you.
If anyone wants a dog, there's one for sale.
Just letting you know, you can't do that with the child. Just give it up.
It's really taught us like.
Facebook buy, swap, sell.
Yeah. We read every book under the sun. We watched every YouTube video on how to have a beautiful dog. And it didn't work. I have read zero things for child rearing because I'm like, who cares?
It doesn't mean anything. There is a debate about nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it was just in Huxley.
I think so. I hope
you
so.
You have not done anything.
I can't have two biting children in the house. So I really hope.
There may be a time that you do though.
And I know how to handle it.
Or at least endure it.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Oh, bless. What a vibe.
What a time.
What a vibe. But, you know, we can just put that to the side for the next 40 minutes and just talk about more exciting things. Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Reeder, preached during our services this past weekend, continuing in our series, Discerning the Invitation of God Together. Mark spoke from the book of Acts and the story of the early church discerning God's call to include the Gentiles. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. And so today in the Big Three, we're going to keep the conversation going from Mark's message. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark and Jess and I will be putting the Big Three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But as always, Jess, before we get Mark in the room, I'm keen to hear your thoughts coming out of the message on Sunday. It was the wrap-up of the series. It was the fourth and final installment of the saga that has been discernment. I hope it's not a saga. I hope it's actually a wonderful tale and journey, but you get where I'm going.
Yep. I thought it was interesting like to see how they navigated the bombshell that was bringing in the Gentiles.
Yeah.
I think all the Gentiles in the room can agree they're pretty happy with the no circumcision rule.
Can confirm.
Can confirm. That would have been
and
really
that I can
upsetting.
Eat bacon.
Yeah. Can
Delight.
Eat bacon. delightful. But just seeing how they kind of navigated that, all their preconceived notions of this is how we were raised and this is how it should be done if you're following the Lord, and then what actually is necessary and what God's actually calling people to do. So I thought that was really cool.
What a wild experience though. And like we've obviously talked a few times during this series as a church about, you know, our plans of how this discernment process is hopefully going to shape a plan for us as a church moving forward. And that I know Mark has said a number of times, like, we're not anticipating that God's going to call us on a full 180, you know, turnaround and go into completely
different
direction.
I secretly hope so, just to see how Mark handles it.
Oh, gosh.
I think he's just grooming us a little bit, like, it's going to be the same, okay? Like, anyone who hears anything different,
the Gentiles are coming,
they're wrong.
But, like, you're right. Like, it would have just been such a, like, it was such a drastic turnaround for them.
Yeah.
Like, God sometimes just flips the tables on us and, you know, I guess we do need to be prepared for that, but encouraged that there is scripture that kind of helps us figure out and helps us kind of reflect on, well, this has happened before and this is how the church dealt with it.
Yeah.
We can be informed and encouraged by that.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a wild time. Mm. Yeah. Great stuff. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. We were, I dare say, inundated with questions on Slido this
week.
It was a time. But these are the big three that made the cut. So just tell us what they are.
Question one, the prohibitions given in Acts were contextual. Are there prohibitions we have, we should have for faith in our modern Western context?
Heavy. Mm. Prohibitions is such like a full-on word, doesn't it?
Should we be lining up the adult men to get circumcised? No, I hope not.
I don't know.
Question two. If we are called into a role of authority, how do we discern what is Jesus and what is community influence?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind an answer to that question.
For sure, definitely. And question three, has GBC had any experiences that we should be reflecting theologically on?
Yeah, right on.
Let's look back.
Yeah, let's
back to the beginning. that will never happen again.
That was special. That was special. Thank you so much for that. Well,
you're welcome.
Before we break out into song, let's get the man.
And would
himself.
Most of our readers, our listeners, know that?
Yeah. No, Hilary I don't
Duff?
Know what
you're... No. Hilary Duff.
No, I'm sorry.
Obviously, my rendition of it was not as iconic.
Can't say that I've spent too much time in the dulcet tones of Hilary Duff.
That's outrageous.
I'm sorry.
You need to work on that before next week and then we can do a duet.
We can do a duet. Well, again, before that happens, let's get the man in. Mark Rayner, welcome to the Big Three. Help us, please. Save us from ourselves.
You say that every week.
And because every week we just somehow take this podcast somewhere it's not meant to go. Yeah.
Hi, guys. Hi. I'll do my best.
Yeah, play referee.
That's right.
How are you going, Mark?
Yeah, I'm going all right, actually.
Yeah? What's coming up for you?
Well, I mean, I got long service leave coming up, and more immediately, the start of my hockey season.
And do I say more importantly?
More, well, I'm not sure I want to say that on the podcast. This is why it always gets in trouble. Yes. I make my official debut on Sunday evening, 9:15 p.m.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Who wants to exert themselves physically at 9:15?
The apparently world of hockey is wild.
Apparently I do.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that, the actual start of it. So the it's all up on the Ice Hockey New South Wales website. Like you can follow the teams and the league. Like it's all a little bit profesh in that sense. Everything else has not been, but like the website looks like they know what they're doing.
Do you have a cheer squad with some pom poms and things?
I don't know about the pom poms, but like Nicole and the girls are coming. And a couple
Hopefully
of mates are
signs.
Coming.
I hope they make signs.
So can we just crash?
Yeah.
9:15, Liverpool.
What number are you?
That's turned me off straight
Well,
away.
I don't know if I'll have my jersey yet. So because I think the whole
so they're not very organized.
Yeah. That's why the website
it's
looks correct.
It's a perception only.
Well, I mean, I think it's just a little bit of, you know, the chaos of any kind of sport club run by volunteers. But it sounds like they have to wait until all the teams are finalized before they can order all the jerseys, and they
Very
do
good.
It for the entire club, blah, 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 blah. But I will be number 17. So
the number, we know the number.
It's significant in part, mostly because my brother wears the same number. So, I'd kind of identified a handful of numbers that I'd like to wear, and 17 was kind of on the short list, mm-hmm. along with a couple of others. And then I was chatting to my brother and just said, "Oh, what number do you wear right now?" And he said, "Oh, you know," and he named number 17. And I was like, "Well, that's on the short list, so like that's decided."
Here we
so,
go.
Two brothers, two hemispheres, one number. So,
oh wow, so,
same skill level.
My brother would probably be a better hockey player than I am, okay. by oh. quite a way. It's only because he's
Listen
been playing for a lot longer.
Yeah, that's
delightful.
So when I played two games with him when we were overseas 7 or 8 years ago. He'd signed me up as a casual player, so I actually got to play two games. And I just didn't want to embarrass him in front of all
Fair
his
enough.
Friends.
Fair. I'm sure so, he wanted the same thing.
Yeah, and his at the end of the first game, his captain looked at me. We're in the change room. He looked at me and goes, "Well, you didn't suck that bad." And I was like, you'd be great in Australia. Yeah. But I also felt that, you know, I didn't embarrass him, so that was the important part. Very so anyway, good. So that, I'm looking forward to that on the weekend. So,
yeah, I hope you win, and I hope you keep your teeth as
and
well.
And I hope you don't embarrass anyone.
Yeah. Well, I've got the full cage, so I shouldn't lose any teeth.
That's good.
And I've been meeting more and more of my teammates, and I think that I'll probably fit in
they
quite
nicely.
They
all have their teeth?
They have their teeth.
Great. You've just told me many stories of people just spitting a tooth out and then
Oh, that's playing. That. Yeah, that's the professionals, you know. So.
Well, you're a professional now, right?
Well, I don't know about that. I did block a shot last week, and I have just a wonderful bruise on my leg. Like, it is just, it's just.
You
I
need
can't
a cage
imagine,
on your legs.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine getting hit by a puck by like a professional.
Yeah.
Like, this is just some guy who's playing in Australia.
And I'm what are you insinuating?
Yeah, we're professional.
You know exactly what I'm insinuating. So, anyway, enough of that. Or
before this turns into the Sydney hockey podcast.
See, now there's an idea.
Let's get into the big three.
Yeah, let's.
So this question is for all the haggis eating fans out there in the community. we want to know, it was kind of given a list, came back to the Gentiles of like, okay, you don't need to do a lot of the stuff we do, but there's a few things that you do need to kind of adhere by. Yeah. And a lot of them were around like sexual immorality and then a lot of food stuff, not drinking blood and things like that. But for people who really enjoy the taste of rare meat, we want to know, the prohibitions given in Acts were contextual, but are there prohibitions we should have for faith in our modern Western context?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because I think we always kind of grapple with like the application of scripture, right? And so this is to some degree another question of application, right? So here we have four very clear commands that you would think, because they're in scripture, we should just kind of automatically apply them to ourselves. Yeah. And more or less, I think that's not a bad way forward, right? Mm. When you find commands in scripture, it's always good to kind of start with we should probably try to obey that.
Yeah.
Sometimes, of course, it's the principle underneath it that's more significant. Mm. And I think this is one of those sorts of circumstances, because those prohibitions are, as you said, they're contextual. So even the situation that they're writing to address is not quite like anything that we would experience, right? Mm. So for them, it was largely around the social conventions driven by the theology that had forever separated Jews and Gentiles. And that had become more and more important in the centuries before Jesus, right? And so we don't have quite that same situation where we're having an influx of all these people who just see the world completely differently than we do and practice different, all sorts of things. So I think we have to kind of dig underneath that to some of the some of the principles. And I think that there's probably two edges to it. Like, there's the social convention part, and that's myriad, right? But there's a whole bunch of things that we can a whole bunch of things that can get in the way of, you know, what they talk about in Acts is kind of that table fellowship, right? Just the things that make it hard for us to kind of get along because we're too different.
Mm.
So I think we have to just be aware of those things and on both ends, right? On both ends, like, I have to be aware that sometimes the things that separate me from someone else or that make it hard to get along are just me getting hung up on social conventions. So I need to be open to that. But I think we also need to kind of be prepared to, I guess, adhere to or be aware of or make some concessions. So the example that comes to mind for me, when I used to do a lot more kind of itinerant speaking, I'd speak at other churches, I would inevitably go with like a jacket and a tie. And the reason was that it was so much easier to take the tie off and become less formal than it was to become more formal. And often I didn't know the culture of the churches that I was speaking at. And I didn't want to come in looking casual if the congregation's culture was more formal. Because then when I get up to speak, the first thing they would see is how casual I was dressed. And that
Who's this skater boy? I'm not listening to him.
Skater boy.
Pretty sure that was never actually on the cards.
That wasn't the look you were going for.
That's the source of Avril Lavigne's inspiration.
Well, she's Canadian, so.
Zing.
But is it the real Avril Lavigne anymore? Sorry.
We digress.
Yeah. We do digress. And that was a deliberate decision on my behalf to just try to make sure that I didn't get in the way with something as frivolous as my clothing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that if I was the only one with the suit and the jacket and the tie, I'd take the jacket off, take the tie off. Again, just so that people were like, okay, we're good. And I think there's lots of those sorts of things that individual congregations would kind of have. And while we need to be aware of them, I think that's kind of a social convention piece. But I think the heart of the question that's been asked is more about the theological stuff, right? Because I think that we would say, yeah, fine, it's all well and good to, wear a tie if everyone wears a tie or to, whatever the case might be. But those prohibitions are probably more theologically driven. So as I mentioned on Sunday, Ben Witherington, who's a New Testament scholar, and like many New Testament scholars, does a lot of work on the context. He reckons that all four of those prohibitions are wrapped around idolatrous pagan practices. Mm-hmm. That there's enough evidence for us to suggest that not only the way the food, food sacrificed to idols would then be sold in the market or eaten by those who were around, and if I was a Christian, if I were invited by a pagan friend of mine to attend a religious festival and then the meal afterwards, there was a social convention there.
Yeah.
So there was the meat strangled and the blood. All of those were kind of, I guess we could kind of go, well, they all seem like they strike me as pagan festival stuff, but sexual morality was also apparently fairly common. And so that ultimately what James and the apostles are asking the Gentiles to do is to break the associations of that component of their pagan background.
Yeah.
In part because of the social convention, right, that would then allow Jews and Gentiles to eat together. Because it's interesting, there's no mention of clean or unclean food.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, abstain from bacon because it's just really offensive. It's more about the idolatrous components of it. But there's a social convention to that. First of all, but there's also that deeper theological principle of like separation, purity, holiness, that kind of set apartness. And so I think that for us, we need to consider the social convention components and the principles that let's just make it easy for us to engage with one another as Christians. But then the questions around purity and separation and holiness, I think, are well worth thinking about. Now, again, that would be a little bit contextual depending on where you lived and, all those sorts of things. But I think, things like sexual immorality would probably still make our list today of things that we should probably be careful of. I know that we often, I think we caricature like conservative Christians in the 50s with, no dancing, no singing, no movies, no cards, all that kind of stuff.
No rock and roll.
Yeah, no rock and roll. But there does seem to me to be a space there for us to consider what we watch, what we attend, those sorts of things. And again, I probably wouldn't want to put it in a prohibition sense, but I think that there's space for us to be able to say, yeah, you can go to the movies. But, personally, I've never really understood why anyone really would watch a horror film. But is that the sort of thing that as Christians we ought to be taking in, for instance? And again, I wouldn't want to make a prohibition about it. Like if it's classified as horror, you cannot watch it. But you just think, okay, there's some space in there. Like not every artist, maybe we shouldn't necessarily be attending every concert that everyone, like, those are not morally neutral things. Mm. So I guess I just kind of wonder in that space whether there's something where, and I don't have any real answers to that, because I think that there's all sorts of components that go into it, but that seems to me like a bit of a space. I think that there'd be some value in thinking through things like consumerism and what that looks like for us. Now, again, these are massive sorts of things.
Yeah, I don't love when you bring up this topic.
but your credit card does.
But those sorts of things where I think the principle is that James was calling them to be aware of the aspects of their life before Jesus that may not be appropriate to bring into their life with Jesus, right? So while they most likely had ceased worshiping idols because they now believed in Jesus as their Lord and Savior, the participation in those social gatherings was still kind of getting awfully close to the line in that sense. And I think that's where I would raise things like consumerism. We can't get away from money. We can't get away from the economy that we have. But how do we do that in a way that's godly? Mm. You know, I think entertainment and all of those, like, that's good stuff.
Right? Yeah.
It's not a matter of drawing the line and saying you shall never.
I love a rom-com.
But, but what do we do with that in terms of, you know, making sure that there's an element of our witness that's still viable, like those sorts of questions. Mm.
Reflective practice.
Which are a little bit bigger, of course, than the prohibitions that James has provided, which to some degree are kind of simple. But they would have had some real, there would have been some confusing elements, I can imagine, for those Gentile Christians who are like, so, you know, like my brother, who's not a believer, has gotten married. And there's the, you know, and there's the involvement of the gods because that's how we do things here.
Yeah.
Can I go to that wedding? Like, you know, like I'm sure that there were all sorts of gray areas, but raising this for the Gentiles to say, hey, listen, you're saved by faith. So this is not a salvation issue in terms of what we're asking you to do, but as an extension of your belief in Jesus and that you've been set apart, you would do really well to avoid these things. And he's not making a suggestion. It is, you know, the general consensus of commentators seems to be that he's doing more than saying, hey, it'd be nice if you thought about doing these things.
Yeah.
It's very much a matter of this is what's going to be required. And so I think there are a number of areas where we could fruitfully have those conversations. Yeah.
What does this mean for the Jews, though, if they have kind of seen like, okay, a lot of our stuff is unnecessary now in terms of salvation. These are the kind of four things you should do. What does that mean for them and their practice? Are they kind of off the hook in all of their kind of tradition?
Mad identity crisis. Like everything I thought was important isn't important.
Or I'd just be hella jealous that these guys get to eat bacon and still go to heaven and here I am following all these rules.
I mean, bacon is heaven.
Yeah.
So,
Theology aside, I think it's a great follow-up, Jess, because I think that's one of the other pieces. I mean, so often I think the church has – I think rightfully probably been accused of or has been guilty of making people conform to their social practices that are really social practices, sometimes driven by theological desires. Mm. You know, so the caricature of, you know, we don't smoke, we don't drink, we don't gamble, we don't dance. Like, you know, like
that was driven.
But it was driven by kind of a theological concern. But what ends up becoming the barrier for people is the social convention, how that gets played out. And so I think we always do want to be asking, you know, we want to make sure that everyone's kind of, if I'm going to require things of you, then there ought to be requirements of me as well. And if the only requirements are the things that I already do, then I ought to be suspicious of my list.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I think that for the Jewish people, the Jewish believers, to be more specific.
Jews for Jesus.
Yes, let's go with that. I think that they would have been going through, you know, to Matt's point, I think a really serious rethinking of just about everything.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, like you read through the Gospels and there are places where Jesus had already indicated that the clean, unclean food distinctions
were on their way out.
Well, they were important, but they were important, again, it seems like It seems like the Pharisees in particular had ended up making the social conventions the important part,
yeah. Yeah.
rather than the theological kind of foundations, mm. right? So I think Jesus would affirm the theological foundations of yes. being separate, right? And yep. so the food regulations were, you know, in the book of Leviticus, were wrapped around the discernment mm. process, right? And the people of Israel were called to discern between what was clean and unclean. So there's a sense that even what you eat is part of what it means to be in relationship with God.
Yep.
And so they were to be discerning, they were to be aware, they were to be able to kind of employ discernment in any situation they found themselves in. I think that sense of separateness and
yeah, wow.
care and all-inclusiveness of our discipleship, I think that's the important part. So I don't think Jesus would have said to them, yeah, just eat whatever you want.
No.
Like that wasn't, because that's a social convention piece. Mm. But what he was pointing out was the theological component of it, which is the thing that makes you unclean is stuff that comes out of your heart, not stuff that goes in your stomach.
Mm.
Like the idea that by eating bacon, you've somehow become unclean mm. in your heart. It's like that's apart from what the law was meant to do. To kind yeah. of really get yeah. at. And, but I think at the same point, like the early church would have been going through massive changes yeah. of, and that would have been sped forward by the Gentile inclusion mm. of kind of going, oh, all right. So now when we start to think about it, we start to really reflect upon Jesus's teaching. Oh, maybe there are some things that we don't need to be engaged in, you know? So the first Christian couple to have a child, a male child, if they were both Jews, at 8 days, that child would have been circumcised. Mm. Now we're saying that circumcision isn't necessary. Now, if they had done that, I think everyone would have gone, that's fine. Like, yeah. no problems there. Mm. But if they had chosen not to.
Mm.
And it's confusing because a lot of these commands and things were very clearly given from God, like
yeah.
written on some stone tablets yeah. or like, yeah. so it wasn't like they'd just come up with these things no. by themselves.
No. No, exactly. Yeah. So I think that all that, even you know, Jesus' teaching around the Sabbath and what that looked like, they continued to observe the Sabbath, although they began to observe Sunday, the resurrection day, rather than the Sabbath on Saturday. But, you know, they were trying to figure out what does this look like,
yeah.
you know, and once you include others who don't have the same background, it becomes pretty massive.
Mm. Poor guys.
Mm. So I think that there would have been plenty of stuff for them to be working through themselves.
Yeah. yeah.
Just trying to figure out which bits of social convention made it impossible for Gentiles to join them.
Yeah.
Which things ought they to continue to work out. And, you know, like even Paul has – it's not mixed messaging, but like – you know, he's like, to the Jews, I become like a Jew. To the Gentiles, I'm a Gentile. Like, so that people can be saved.
Mm.
And so they're like Titus, who's a Greek. He did not have circumcised. But Timothy, who was Jewish, well, half Jewish, he had him circumcised. And the rationale is kind of given, you know, in terms of their ability to witness and what that meant.
Mm.
So even Paul, yeah. you can just see in his practice, he's like not making it up as he goes along, but like making it up as he goes along.
Yeah, just
you know?
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Mm. You yeah. know, kind of confirming to people that no, circumcision is not the thing.
Yeah.
And adherence to the law of Moses is not the thing, but the law of Moses was given as a reflection of the relationship. So we should adhere to the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
And on they go.
Jeez, so. It sounds like a hot mess, but spoiler alert, we know how it ends and it works out. So
yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but really, really complicated stuff. So yeah. Excellent question.
Well, let's get into question two. So Mark, you kind of, obviously we've been talking about the discernment process and obviously discerning together throughout this whole series, but your message on Sunday kind of focused in for a moment around, you know, those in positions of authority. And we talked about the weird cultural context that Australia has with its leaders. But obviously, like, authority doesn't just apply to the senior pastor or the church leadership team. Like, we can all find ourselves in different leadership positions, yep. different positions of authority. So if we are called into a role of authority, how do we discern what is Jesus and what is community influence?
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
how do you differentiate the noise, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you're hearing.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of components to this. I think, you know, in terms of the noise versus what Jesus, the voice of Jesus, I think that we need to be very careful not to hold those as polar opposites, right? Like we're called to follow Jesus in our culture.
Yeah.
So some of that noise, right, some of the cultural circumstances we find ourselves in is exactly where Jesus is at work. So we need to pay attention to the cultural moment that we find ourselves in. What opportunities are there for the gospel? What obstacles are there to the gospel? And those will change in various circumstances and situations. So I think we have to hold them together.
Yeah.
First of all. And I think we need to then I guess believe that Jesus will make his will in terms of his immediate I guess specific will for us really clear. Like I think there's a, to some degree, you know, if Jesus never told us anything more, we would have enough to go on, right? We'd have enough principles in general to kind of go, you know what, this is what we're called to in any circumstance.
Yeah.
If we're loving people, if we are caring for those who are marginalized or oppressed, if we're looking out for those on the outer, pretty sure Jesus is going to go, that's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not going to be out of his will. But in terms of those specific, like, do this very specific thing, start this very specific ministry, go in this very specific direction, I think we do have to trust that Jesus' voice, and I guess, and this is the theology behind it, that he is, that his ability to speak is infinitely greater than our ability to hear, right?
So but that kind of sounds like an oxymoron, though. Like,
well, yes and no. Like in the sense that if Jesus really wants us to hear something and we have set ourselves to listen and he really needs us to hear something, we'll hear it.
Yeah.
And that does mean that we have to be in a posture of listening. I think we can go through our lives, you know, metaphorically speaking with our fingers in our ears going, you know, la, 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 you know, and not wanting to. But if we're in a posture of seeking to hear from Jesus, then I think we need to, you know, we need to try to, you know, I guess remove the static from the noise, right? A little bit to kind of go, where are the opportunities for the gospel here to be asking, you know, what parts of our cultural moment are fertile ground for the kingdom? What areas are really hard soil? I think we need to be thinking theologically on our culture in that sense. But if we're doing that and have a posture of listening, I think that we'll be led in that space.
Yeah.
I think the other component, though, is about that leadership piece, right? And I, you know, I said this on Sunday, like I do have a little bit of a conflict of interest when I start talking about, you know, submission to authority. So it's a little bit awkward, you know. And here are 17 points I just happen to come up with. You know?
You've also got an uphill battle ahead of you, just FYI.
Which is the unique Australian circumstance. You know,
case in point.
But I think that there is something in that space for us about how do we in leadership, whether it be leadership of a church or of a life group or a ministry area or, you know, a business or whatever the case might be, how do we go about doing that, right? And I think that, you know, we need to try to make, you know, we need to make decisions for the group to some degree, right? Like if the decisions are only going to serve me, that's probably problematic, which I mean, it means that we probably need to have not only some good self-reflection questions along the way, but we probably also need to have, I think any leader would need this, does need this, voices that they trust who can say to them, you sure that's not just about you?
Yeah.
Which is the Australian people, we take that role very seriously.
We do take that, so
yes.
can confirm.
You've got enough of those voices.
It's kind of built in. So, but I think it's really important then that leaders listen to those voices, right? And that's not always easy to do for all sorts of reasons.
All of them?
Well, I was going to say, I think we need to discern between them.
Yeah.
Because they're like anything, there's sometimes it's like, sometimes as a leader, you have to kind of go, I've heard that, but we're still heading in a different direction.
Yeah.
Not always the easiest decision to make, but I think that's important. So I think we need to be listening to those voices. I think we need to make sure that even in our self-reflection, we're not just kind of, you know, doing things that are good for us. And I think that in a similar way, like we need to practice submission even in authority. you know, the submission to what's good for the community
yeah.
and the group. That's actually one of the ways that we practice submission. I think listening to voices is another way that we practice submission because we are giving voice to others and we are genuinely seeking, or hopefully we're genuinely seeking, to set aside power in the moment to be able to listen to that. But at the end of the day, like I'm struck by James just kind of listening to everybody and then kind of going, right, here's what we're going to do. And you're like, holy, like such a brazen call for such a complex matter.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to his wisdom, his influence, that everyone's like, yep, that sounds like a great way forward.
That is not what I suggested, but okay.
Because he doesn't bring in the army, right? He doesn't enforce it. He basically kind of makes that call after having listened to everything and reflected on scripture himself and all of those sorts of things. So I think that there does come a time when you need to make those decisions. And even in the decision-making process, I think, and this is equally tricky, making sure that there's enough time in the process of change for people to be brought along in that space. I think that becomes fairly important too. So I think all of those things go together, I think, to make decisions that are good decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and apart from that, I think, you know, as leaders, I think you want to be asking, I guess, in your own devotional life for Jesus to lead you as you are appointed to lead.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the things that I feel or are very aware of, like a sense of being called to a position then brings with it certain responsibilities that I can't shirk away from. I need to kind of take those seriously. And sometimes that requires that I have to make a decision on this. Kind of I've listened to the voices, we've talked to people, we've thought this through, we've prayed about it, and now this is the decision.
Yeah.
And kind of trust that that's the way that God is leading.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and to try to be humble enough to, you know, if you get it wrong, to kind of go, well.
My bad.
Yeah, you know, and that's not always easy either. But yeah, so I'm not sure if that answers much of the question or some of the question or just answers things around the question. But that's my best shot.
It's all helpful though. It's all helpful. And I think you're right. Like it's complicated. It's not something that we should do by ourselves. Like I do think that leadership and positions of authority can sometimes feel quite lonely, but they don't need to be. Like we can still welcome others into that space to help us discern, you know, that we're not just being influenced by the crowd, but that we're being influenced by Christ.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, leadership from a Christian perspective, I think, is a whole other topic.
You know, There's a whole other nut to crack.
You know, in terms of how do you lead like Jesus would lead, you know?
Held to a very high standard.
You would be held to a very high standard. That's right. And I have personal issues with like leadership books that say this is how Jesus would be a leader because he didn't come as a leader. If he was going to be a CEO, he would have been a great CEO, but he didn't do that. Mm. And so I think we have to be really careful about saying this is what it would look like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think following Jesus and being a leader, I think there's, you know, certainly some space to reflect.
Some overlap.
Oh yeah. You know, but what that looks like is, and I think decision-making is one of those really tricky spaces because at one level, someone has to say, this is what we're doing. Eventually.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's all well and good to submit, but at a certain point in time, this
sometimes
is the decision.
You need to lead. You
know?
Yeah.
And so what that looks like from a Christian perspective and how do you listen to dissent and all those sorts of things. But
I don't envy you.
Okay. That's probably a fourth question.
That is a fourth question.
Nobody else is interested.
No, but
I'm not sure I want to do it. So.
Well, let's get into question three.
So Mark, each week through this sermon series, as you've kind of wrapped up, you've talked about the importance of reflecting on where God has worked in the past and how we've seen him kind of play out. And a lot of the stories that we've looked at have people in them who are kind of reflecting on how God's worked for them. Has GBC had any of these experiences that we should be reflecting theologically on?
Yeah, look, it has been striking how significant experience is. And again, I think we have to be very clear about the role of experience, right? Because I think we would want to probably in terms of priority, we'd probably want to place scripture ahead of experience, but I wouldn't say that there'd be a lot of daylight between them, right? Because our experiences go a long way to shaping our understanding of God and even our understanding of scripture. And so our experience has an enormous influence. It's a similar thing to, you know, like our emotional response to stuff. Like, we don't want to be driven by our emotions, but we want to be guided by them.
Not mine, you don't.
I've been doing it wrong.
Shut them down.
I've been doing it wrong.
I just remember someone doing some teaching on ethics, like how do you make ethical decisions? And I think it was like fourth or fifth in their list of kind of, as Christians, how do we go about doing it? They talked about emotions and they just said, you know, God's given us our emotions and sometimes our response to an ethical dilemma is that kind of ugh.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's basically worth listening to. Mm. Should that be the first thing that we respond to? Should that be the basis of our final ethical decision? Probably not, but it plays a role in it. So there's lots that kind of goes into those sorts of spaces. But I think the experience piece, it just keeps popping up. Mm. And I reckon that, I mean, the answer to the question is yes, GBC has had some of those experiences. How you go about identifying which ones to draw attention to, I think, is an interesting one. And I think my immediate reaction would be to focus on those stories that seem to have resonated in a particular way with the community of faith, the stories that lots of people know and lots of people tell and that we keep coming back to, right? So the chicken shed.
Classic.
It is a classic. It's a banger.
You know, a group of when the area was not developed at all, a group of young families fleeing the expense of the city came to the suburbs.
The irony.
Now they're sitting on a cash pot.
You know, bought this land, lots of young families, not very many churches, felt called to start a Sunday school, which they held in their home, including the hosed out chicken shed out the back, you know.
Dead.
It was before work, health, and safety, as we know
well
it today.
Well before.
You know, but that is a story that we keep coming back to. And it's not that, and again, like it's the principles underneath it. There was a group of people who looked around at their community and went, there's a need here and we can fill it. And they use whatever was at hand to do it. And I think that there are a number of those sorts of stories that we've had. So I included some of these in the long read, gave a little bit of historical background. And the long read was just kind of a bunch of stuff around our discernment process and a couple of other big issues. It wasn't that long, but it was long enough.
It was
longer than my normal communications.
I mean, we both read it multiple times. Absolutely thrilling stuff.
I'm not lying. Like, I did read it multiple times.
I just read it once. I got the point. I got the gist.
Yeah, but there's a handful of things that I think are quite significant about GBC's experience and how it seems that God has invited us to participate.
Yeah.
And how we have. So I think, you know, one of the big stories or experiences of GBC is the way in which we resource things. You go back quite a ways now, but you know, for the last 40 years in particular, and even before that, you see evidence of GBC releasing their staff to serve wider kingdom purposes. Whether that be, Carl, who is our former senior pastor, into media space and involvement in the Arrow Leadership Program, my involvement at Moreland College as a lecturer there while still on staff here. Going back even further, I think you find lots of those sorts of examples.
Yeah,
we've been a church that lots of stuff has started from. We're not real good at sustaining relationships with things that we've started, but we seem to have a.
We'll make friends quick, but
we seem to have a productivity we seem to have some sort of a attraction to startups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not quite the language I think we would have used for lots of our history because it's a relatively new term. But, you know, like things like Christian Surfers that started here.
Mm.
You know, we don't have a great deal to do with Christian Surfers, or we still continue to support them. But the importance of the story for us is really that it started here.
Mm.
You know, Bike for Bibles, an initiative with Bible Society.
Mm.
It's raised thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars for Bible literacy mm. around the world. That started here. Mm. And again, we don't talk about it a lot. Like yeah. we just kind of get at it. And I think there's something in that story, that experience of yeah. it. Just look at all these things that start here.
Mm.
We don't kind of do much with them later on. We're just really keen to start stuff, get it going, or to inspire people to start stuff.
Release, yeah.
And then to release it. And maybe that's a deficiency on our behalf. Like maybe it's something that we have to address and get better at kind of holding on to those things.
We can't maintain all of the things we've started.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that idea of being a startup church, you kind of go, okay, that's an interesting story that keeps popping up. I think our resourcing, and particularly the real can-do attitude, I think you find this lots in Australian cultures, but you know, just that whole, what do we have at hand? Oh, a bunch of us like to ride bikes. We could raise money for Bibles. Poof, off you go. We really like to surf, and we're really passionate about following Jesus, and heaps of people who surf aren't into Jesus. We should, poof, off you go. And our willingness, you know, in terms of mission support, you know, the millions of dollars that we've raised over the last decade alone for overseas missions. It's just like we've got capacity and resource that seems to be part of our story that I think we need to reflect on a little bit. Mm. You know, I think that those strike me as being key moments. You know, the decision to build what's no longer our new auditorium. It's not new, but to build the second auditorium.
Yeah.
You know, in the midst of the global financial crisis, because we really felt that God was leading us. So there was a sense of being willing to follow, even though it didn't seem to make a lot of logical sense.
Mm.
The way in which the three sites that have become our parking lot all became available just as we were looking.
Yeah.
You know, like those sorts of stories of God's provision
when
we've stepped out in faith, I think are really significant. You know, like every year in May Mission Month, our target looks ludicrous to me.
Yeah.
You know, $187,000 or whatever it is going to be this year, something in that vicinity. He's kind of, that's just a ridiculous amount of money. And yet there's the provision of God every year. And you just think, so what is that all about?
Mm.
Well, that's one of those ongoing stories. And so I think that those are well worth reflecting on. And, you know, Matt, you said earlier, you know, God may call us to a 180-degree turn around and we head in a completely different direction, and it marks kind of a very much a second chapter, you know, of this is completely different. But I suspect that, and this is not just because of my own aversion to change, but
is it?
I said not wholly. But you see it in Scripture where God is persistent with his plans.
Yeah.
And even when things are new, there's still a continuity, right?
Mm.
So the whole issue of the inclusion of the Gentiles, the problem was that God hadn't started something new.
Mm.
He said, this is the continuity of what I've already been doing. And so you need to deal with the mess. Yeah, it would have been easier if he just kind of said, okay, the old is done. This is brand new. Starting at square one, we're including the Gentiles. You got to sort yourselves out.
Yeah.
But no, it was a sense of, the Jewish people are now being brought in together along with the Gentiles, and there's continuity. So you figure out how the law of Moses interacts with Gentiles now, you know. And so there's
that sounds like a you problem, guys.
And so I think that continuity is worth reflecting on.
Mm.
You know, I think that as a community of faith, those are some of the experiences that I think are worth reflecting on over time to consider where God may be inviting us. You know, we've tried to have, I think, a good eye on our community. We've tried to fill needs when we've seen them. We've been flexible with how we've done that.
Mm.
You know, it hasn't always remained the same. There's some stuff that was wildly successful in the past that we no longer do.
Mm.
Because the time had changed.
And
we don't actually have a lot of programs that we've been running for 70
Forever.
Years
yeah.
or 50 years or 40 or 30 years.
Mm.
There's a flexibility that we've had. And, you know, making those decisions hasn't been easy, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But there's a willingness to try different things. startups. Like, I think that's well worth reflecting and prying on. So those would be that's where I would start. And then I think it's worth asking people, you know, who've been around the place for a while, and even people who are relatively new, like, what are the stories you hear, or why did you show up? Or, you know, what are the things that stand out about this community of faith? You know, someone who's just recently joined the church might have a particular take on, this is what I see. This is what this church seems to stand for. And even those might be clues for us to kind of reflect on, what does that look like? You know, right, the fact that we have I can't tell you how many people I meet who say, oh, I used to go to Gaimia.
Yeah.
Like, it's like everybody used to go to Gaimia or something, you know, and it's, you know, the Baptist world is fairly small, so it's certainly part of it. But there's something about that, you know, the number of people who have come through these doors who have spent some period of time here have been shaped by this community of faith. I'm not sure what to do with it, but that seems to be part of that experience too.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I guess coming from that, like, we wait in bated breath for the next story, the next experience, the next journey.
Yeah, I think so.
Exciting times.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if God invited us into some or like maybe several new areas where we were starting things up that had global impact, national impact, statewide impact, I'd be really excited to be part of that. You know, if we raised up a whole new generation of leaders who led churches around the state and country, like, I'd want to be a part of that. If we, you know, whatever those circumstances might be, I'd like to be a part of what God invites us to. And if it looks kind of like what it's been in the past, that's plenty exciting.
Yeah.
If it's something completely new, that'll be exciting too. But, you know, I think if it looks like it's looked like in the past, I'm on board. I don't think there's any.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason why you kind of go, we've already done that. I think that the part of our story is pretty exciting if it were to continue.
Well, I don't surf, I don't skate, I don't ride a bike, but I think we could start up like a Netflix watching community.
Ooh!
That's just where I'm going with it.
With that triple butter explosion popcorn. Heck yes.
Done.
Give me some thought too.
Thank you, Jesus.
I will step into that calling.
Right. Give me some thought, of course, to the things that we're watching.
Correct.
Well, Rita, thanks so much. Thanks so much for, like, I think this series has been really significant for us. Wherever we are, like, for those who are a part of our GBC community, but even those who might listen into the Big Three who aren't a part of the GBC community, because it has a personal impact, but also a corporate one as well. Yeah. So it's exciting times.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. All right, Jessica Baker. 4 weeks in discernment, the final one, final Big Three on this topic. Where's your head at?
I'm feeling confident moving forward. What we're in at the moment is not as complex as what the stories in the Bible have been like.
And we have bacon to sustain us. I keep coming back to it, but it's like, it's really important to me. I love it so much.
And I think trying to convert, you know, pagans in our society to Christianity, be like, oh, sorry, you can't do this. You can't eat the bacon. Big no-no. Yeah. So God's really made it easy for us in terms of evangelism, I think. I really love, like, kind of delving into that whole, like, bombshell that would have been for the Jewish people of, like, okay, how on earth do we navigate this, and seeing how they relied on God, but, like, delve into the scriptures and took public opinion and all that kind of stuff. It just seemed really cool.
Yeah, awesome.
I don't envy them.
No.
No.
No, sir.
No. I'm glad we're just discerning what's our next move now.
I'm glad that that's a them problem. Yeah.
As God said, it was like, that's a you problem. Yeah. What about you?
I love talking about, like, the stories that have shaped our community. I meet with a pastor in South Australia. He's mentoring me through my accreditation process, and he talks a lot about the significance of knowing your community's story and the stories that shape your culture. And I find that really exciting. I love kind of, I'm a bit of a, like, history is a subject that I can kind of get into. So I love seeing the common threads that have kind of defined us and shaped who we are and our sense of identity as a church community. And so it does excite me kind of thinking about, how is our legacy going to shape our future? Because I do believe that God will, there might be those, like, out of left field opportunities, and I do believe that we'll kind of jump at them, but I also think that they're part of GBC's legacy as well. Like, yes, we might be the startup, but Christian Surfers was the first kind of organization that tried to take the gospel to the surfing culture. So like that would have felt very out of left field. But because GBC kind of had this desire and this kind of heartbeat of like, well, let's, you've got an idea, let's run with it. Like we were able to be a part of that. So I mean, like, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm pumped to see it.
No, we definitely have capacity and we make moves. And God's not going to look at us during this period of discernment and go, oh, I'm not really into, I don't really want to work with GBC this year.
I hope not. That would be disappointing.
That'd be so awkward.
Do I dare say that we're trendsetters? I don't know. Can I say that? Are we an influencer? I don't know. Get on the gram. Do a TikTok. Gosh.
Yes, I've never TikTok felt more old ministry.
Saying that sentence. That was horrid. Oh, God.
I mean, our Netflix ministry will go off. I already know.
I can. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for bringing it back to so the welcome. Things that matter. Yeah. Netflix, popcorn, and some bacon. Sounds like a good time.
Keeping it real.
Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.